Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook, Korea. But our premium package bets for UFC Fight Night 78 went 1-1 to profit 0.21 units overall. Back to the present, UFC 194 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a welterweight battle between Court McGee, who is 16-4, and Marcio Lyoto Alexander Jr., who is 12-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened McGee minus 175, the comeback on Alexander Jr., plus 135 right now. Looking over at our sponsor, fivedimes.eu, it is McGee minus 175. The comeback on Alexander Jr. is plus 155. So line margins tightened up a little bit. There has been some two-way action coming into this fight as well. And a lot, again, split opinions out there. I know McGee is definitely the more popular fighter, the more, if you will, kind of a household name to the diehard fans. Not that he's an ultra popular fighter, but at the same time, people know more about McGee than they do Alexander Jr. for sure. And he's a very skilled fighter. He trains at a good camp. He's got all the skills you want to see. I mean, he's got decent stand-up. His boxing game is legit. He's got decent wrestling. He's got a ground game to go with it. So he's a very complete fighter, and there's a lot of good that goes with McGee. But the problem is, I mean, since he dropped down to 170, I don't think he's the same type of fighter that he was, honestly, fighting a little bit heavier. He's had a little bit of success, so don't get me wrong there. But at the same time, I just think there's something missing, and I think the weight cut hasn't really done him justice. And now, with the injuries and being out since his loss to LaFleur, actually, that was back in December of 2013. He's been out an awful long time. Just not sure where he's at this stage of the game. He's coming back, and he's fighting a very game and underrated fighter in Alexander Jr. So you got the basically your complete MMA fighter McGee against a guy that's more known for his striking skill in Alexander Jr., but he's getting a little bit more of a complete game as well. Obviously, he trains at Black House and Tavares as well and crew in Brazil, so he has some decent people to train with, and he is working hard and improving his game. He's taking his striking to another level. That's what he excels at the most. He has those angles that he uses. I mean, that's why his nickname is similar to Lyoto. He has that kind of karate style that he's a little bit unorthodox, but he's pretty technical, and he's really precise with his striking as well, so he can do some damage, underrated knockout power to go along with it. His takedown defense is improving. It's getting better. His sub defense is getting better as well. So there's a lot of things to actually like about Alexander Jr., and he's actually only 26 years old. So he's going to keep on improving fight by fight and getting a little bit more confidence as well. So I liked that for Alexander Jr. as well. And he's actually getting McGee probably at the right time. If McGee in his prime, I would have kind of leaned a little bit more towards him because he is the more complete fighter. But at this stage, even though Alexander Jr. is the dog, I think that he's probably going to be a little bit more ready for this fight, a little bit more prepared. Because if you think about it, I mean, he had some tough fights coming in, you know, to the UFC with his official debut and on the Ultimate Fighter Brazil finale being against Alves. And then, of course, Tim Means in his last fight, which he was actually competitive, more competitive than people thought against Tim Means as well. So I think this is actually a step down in competition for Alexander Jr. And especially that McGee is coming off that layoff. I think he's getting him at the right time. So if he's going to pull off a big win, and get himself on track, I think this is the fight to do that. So I'm expecting a competitive fight, but I think Alexander Jr. is going to be a little bit too slick for McGee on the feet. I think his takedown defense is probably going to hold up enough that he's probably going to outpoint McGee, and possibly even finish McGee. McGee's chin, I mean, he's been rocked before. It's held up pretty good, though. Overall, he's a pretty tough guy, hard to finish. But again, with the time off and the age factor in MMA years, he's a little bit beyond his years that way as well. So I think that this is a good spot for Alexander Jr., and I'm going to pick him to win this fight.
Here's an interesting number for you. 11. That's the amount of surgeries Court McGee has undergone since making his UFC debut after winning The Ultimate Fighter Season 11. That is ridiculous. The guy has had both knees operated on. He's coming off of a trio of surgeries on his wrist. I mean, the guy is just so battle-worn and in such bad physical shape, I'm surprised that he's actually still competing. He's coming off of an 18-month layoff heading into this fight. And honestly, I think that this is a really bad stylistic matchup for him. I mean, McGee when he first entered the UFC, he had a lot going for him. He had a great wrestling and especially a really good submission game, especially when he was in control in top position. He had a good high volume boxing attack. Now I think with all the damage that he's undergone with his knees, he doesn't have that explosion to get fights to the ground easily. He's not able to exploit some of his advantages on the canvas, and he's kind of forced into these stand-up exchanges, and his chin isn't the best, and he packs almost zero power overall on the feet. So Alexander really doesn't have much to worry about. And you look at Alexander, and as Nick mentioned, he's got that Lyoto nickname because he has a really cool karate style, works a lot of kicks. He's definitely going to have a big advantage from distance in this fight. And he is improving boxing as well. But, I mean, if this fight takes place in the phone booth, I see McGee getting the better of most exchanges, even though Alexander hits harder. And, honestly, the only way McGee wins this fight is if he is just super out-voluming Alexander and putting a lot of pressure on him, backing him up constantly, because Alexander does not like that. He's a guy that really wants to keep his distance and then just start working you over with leg kicks, body kicks, head kicks. And if McGee can get in his face and stay in his face, he can win. But I see Alexander just being way quicker, way more athletic, and being able to use that footwork to create that distance. And then I can see him really racking up some points on the feet. Now, if this goes to the ground, McGee will have a big advantage. He does have superior submission skills. He's picked up a few wins by submission in his UFC career, so he could submit Alexander, but Alexander is competent on the ground enough to avoid most situations, although he did get eventually submitted by Warley Alves. But I don't see McGee submitting Alexander. I just don't see McGee being athletic enough to get that big explosive shot to get him to the ground. And maybe a trip or something, but even that I think will be tricky. So I think this is Alexander's fight to lose. I agree with Nick on his breakdown as well, and Alexander is my pick here. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have John McDessie, who is 13-4, taking on Yancy Medeiros, who is 11-3 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Similar line. McDessie opens -175. The comeback on Medeiros +135. Right now, over five dimes, is McDessie -165. Medeiros is +145. So line margins tightened up a little bit again. Two-way action coming in on this fight. Difficult fight to call. For those of you guys that obviously been following the Premium Oddscast along the way, that you guys know that we've had some respect for Medeiros even since he made his UFC debut. But along the way, depending on performances, obviously that stuff can change. And what we've seen from Medeiros recently, I mean, you see some flashes of really good things in his offensive skill set, no doubt about it. I mean, the guy hits with some power, so he's got the killer instinct on the feet that he could definitely do some damage. His submission game, he's obviously shown that he can threaten and finish fights on the ground now as well. But the defensive flaws are what bothers me. I mean, his defense on the feet is just awful. He gets tagged. He gets hurt to the body. Obviously, he gets rocked upstairs as well. His takedown defense is actually pretty good. That's one great thing that he's got going for him as well. But obviously, against somebody like Jim Miller, he was exposed and choked out there as well. So, I mean, he's got some ground deficiencies, but it's hard to get him to the ground. It's more what you got to be concerned about in Medeiros in most cases. It's on the feet. I mean, he could dish it out, but can he take it? And against McDessie, which is basically your sniper here, and that's what he's more known for than anything else. I mean, his accurate striking, it's a thing of beauty. In fact, he's a little small for the weight class, honestly, at 155. I wish that he had a little bit more size on him, because I think he would actually perform better against some of these bigger guys at 155. So he's going to be the smaller guy here as well. But the technical skill, the speed, the accuracy of McDessie should be enough to win him this fight, because Medeiros, again, on the feet, he has that defensive flaw. He's going to get clipped. He's going to get tagged. McDessie obviously has shown in the past that he has capable more than enough knockout power to finish the fight. If you look, Medeiros could definitely offensively have some success early on with his reach, with the way he goes about things. But defensively, we saw what McDessie was able to do to a guy like Campbell. I think we could see the same things here in this spot. So in my opinion, the best path to victory for Medeiros is actually getting this fight to the ground and trying to submit McDessie. I know McDessie's going to be pretty game. He's actually improved his takedown defense a bunch as well. And overall, his submission defense is okay. So I'm going to actually lean towards MacDessy because I think this fight does remain standing and on the feet. He does have the edge, even though he's a smaller guy. I trust his chin more. He's definitely a tough guy. He could take some punishment. I know he's coming off of that brutal fight with Cerrone, which actually concerns me a little bit too. I got to be honest with you. This is his first fight back since that, he broke his jaw really. So, that's a little bit to be concerned, but I still trust MacDessy in this spot more than I do Madero. So that's why I got to lean his way. It's definitely a tough fight to bet. So be careful out there, those of you guys that are betting on this fight, but my official lean is MacDessy.
Both Medeiros and MacDessy are capable of really exciting highlights in the lightweight division, but they are also coming off of two pretty bad losses. In my opinion, Medeiros' loss was way worse because they were both facing solid lightweights, but MacDessy was facing the guy fighting for the title right now, and Medeiros was facing a guy that was trying to become relevant in the lightweight division, and Medeiros got brutalized by Dustin Poirier. Poirier dropped him twice and then really hurt him and then swarmed him with a huge barrage of strikes. And I think that that's actually the recipe here for MacDessy to pull off the win. Now, just like in the last fight where Medeiros had the size advantage over Poirier, he's going to have a big size advantage against MacDessy, but Medeiros just is super hittable. He doesn't utilize a lot of head movement, and he doesn't have a great chin, although he does have a lot of heart and great recovery. I mean, if he gets hurt, he usually bounces right back up, but he does get hurt, and I think that's going to get him in some big trouble. I mean, you look at that last fight, Medeiros was trying to work some reach against Poirier, flicking out the jab, and the second Poirier stepped inside, I mean, he cracked him. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen here against MacDessy. Even though MacDessy's 2 years older, he is just such a technical and precise striker that he makes every one of his strikes count. I mean, this fight actually reminds me a lot of MacDessy's fight against Shane Campbell, which was his last fight before the Cerrone battle. And in that fight, you know, you saw Campbell come out early, aggressive, working some low kicks, and then the second MacDessy got inside on him, it was over. I mean, MacDessy just hammered him with some really good, sharp, crisp punches. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen here. Medeiros is just a little too loosey-goosey on the feet. And yeah, he's got a big physical advantage and he has a lot of power and a really big right hand and a decent jab. But the second he allows his opponent to get inside on him, bad things happen. And I think what's going to happen here is Medeiros will come out. He'll try to, you know, be light on his feet, dance around a little, flick out the jab. And then MacDessy's going to step inside and he's going to wallop him. And if MacDessy does not pick up the finish, I can see MacDessy just doing enough to win the fight and win a decision. Really, the only way I see Medeiros picking up the win here is either if he lands a Hail Mary type of strike, because he does have enough power to potentially make something happen. Maybe he breaks MacDessy's jaw again, just like, or Medeiros should have a slight ground advantage. I mean, he has picked up a couple wins by submission in the UFC. I don't think his ground game is elite by any stretch, but Medeiros does have a better ground game than MacDessy, and he's so big that maybe if he gets on top of MacDessy on the ground in some type of situation, he could make something happen. But overall, this is definitely MacDessy's fight to lose, so I'm clearly on his side. Now, the last bout on the Fight Pass prelims is another lightweight battle between Joe Proctor, who is 11-3, and Magomed Mustafayev, who is 12-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Mustafayev -280. The comeback on Proctor +200. Right now, looking over at the line of five dimes, it's Mustafayev -330. The comeback on Proctor is +270. So line has been bet up. People are fading Proctor just a little bit against a popular Russian that's actually struggled a little bit against Holman in his UFC debut. A lot of people were expecting more from him, but he's a pretty complete fighter. I'm expecting him to do a little bit better here as well. Obviously, he's training with American Top Team, and now he's going to have a little bit more time with that squad, and that squad has been really good. And I mean, just has a lot of momentum on their side, a lot of good training partners to train with. So I think it's a case where Mustafayev's actually going to get better and better fight by fight. So against Proctor, it's going to be another difficult matchup though, because Proctor is one of these guys that's been flying under the radar again for a while. He has a pretty complete game in his own right. So we're going to see a competitive battle. And in fact, the line might be a tad bit high where it's at right now. But that being said, I mean, Mustafayev, again, he's a very complete fighter. I think he's got a little bit more pure power on the feet as well. The wrestling is going to be close, but I actually favor Mustafayev there as well. The submission game, Proctor has sneaky good subs. I mean, if you look, he was obviously in a very close competitive fight in his last one against Edwards, that if it went to the scorecards, he might have lost that fight. But he got the sub with seconds to go, and it was a thing of beauty, honestly, as well. So Proctor has the skill to finish the fight even late. Obviously, he's proven that on the ground. He's got some knockout power in the feet as well. So everywhere the fight takes place, Proctor is going to be competitive. But again, I just think Mustafayev is going to be just a little bit better than Proctor in all areas, including the stand-up game. I think he does have a little bit more power. I trust his chin a little bit more as well. And I think that Proctor's momentum, even though he squeaked by the Edwards fight, is going to probably stop here. And Mustafayev, I'm expecting him, butchering his name a little bit, is going to be, again, a little bit better. So I think he's going to outpoint Proctor, if not, possibly end up getting a stoppage here as well. So hard not to pick against the Russian here. But I am expecting a pretty competitive battle. But my lean is Mustafayev.
Yeah, I'm not quite all aboard the Magomed Mustafayev hype train yet, but I'm intrigued by his performance in his UFC debut against Holman, where he was working some good inside strikes, and he did showcase a little bit of a couple good takedowns, but there's still some flaws in his game for sure. I mean, he does have a lot of heavy strikes. He works good uppercuts and hooks and knees, and he does throw everything with a lot of heat, but he can get stuck on his back, and that is a situation where maybe if Joe Proctor gets on top of him, Mustafayev doesn't get up and either loses a decision or could get submitted. We have seen a lot of these Dagestani fighters kind of fall back down to earth a little bit after the early tremendous amount of hype. Now, Proctor, on the other hand, you know, everybody knows he trains out of Joe Lozon's gym. He does have some pretty decent fundamental striking ability, but his big issue is he's just not a great athlete. He's not particularly fast. He's a bit hittable. He does have good offensive submissions, but he just kind of lacks that quickness and explosion that you see from a lot of the elite fighters. And when he faces guys that can exploit that, you know, things can get ugly for him. I mean, he was probably the more well-rounded fighter when he faced Yancy Medeiros, but Medeiros was just so much quicker than him and explosive, and Medeiros landed a quick spinning back kick to the liver, and Proctor just crumpled into a heap. So this is the type of situation where Proctor is facing a significantly better athlete. Mustafayev is a lot less battle-worn in terms of damage taken in UFC-caliber fights. So even though Proctor is more experienced against better opposition, I think this is a really tough matchup for him. And Mustafayev is 3 years younger as well. And with him being the better athlete, really the only area that I see Proctor being better is I think he has a little bit better offensive submissions, and Proctor might be a little bit better from distance, like extreme distance. But I don't see Mustafayev letting this fight take place in that area. And I see Mustafayev working a lot of phone booth battle, striking, maybe some clinch striking, and then maybe working for takedowns. But I think he keeps this in his realm, and I expect Mustafayev to walk away with the victory. So he is my pick. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have another lightweight contest, this one featuring Leonardo Santos, who is 13-4-1, taking on Kevin Lee, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Lee minus 405, the comeback on Santos plus 285. Wasn't quite high enough, because right now Lee over 5 dimes is minus 600. The comeback on Santos is plus 450. Santos is a very, very good fighter. Obviously, he excels at his ground game. He's one of the best on the ground in the weight class at 155. I mean, his submission background just speaks for itself. So we know that he's got that going for him. We know that he trains at a phenomenal camp as well with the crew over at Nova Unao. So, you know, a lot of good things. I mean, training partners is making him a more complete fighter. I mean, he's getting better for sure. His stand-up game is getting better. He does have some reach over most people. In this fight, though, he actually won't. Because Kevin Lee, even though he's a shorter fighter, he's got the more pure reach in this fight as well. So I just think it's a kind of a difficult matchup, honestly, because Santos, again, even though his stand-up game is improving. It is getting better. He's going to have to probably control Lee on the ground here, and I think he's going to struggle doing so, especially in rounds two and round three. So round one might be a little bit interesting for Lee. He's going to have to be able to sprawl and brawl, and I think he'll be able to do that. But I do think Lee has the more explosive striking. He's quicker. He's faster. Again, Brian was just talking about athletes. Lee is definitely a phenomenal athlete for sure, and he's only getting better fight by fight, which I like to see that. He is obviously the younger, fresher fighter as well. He's 23 compared to Santos's 35. So you're getting a young gun that's trying to move up the ladder that has shown flashes of really of greatness. I mean, with his skill set, I mean, he is wrestling. He's got the explosiveness that I just mentioned on the feet as well. And he's got a submission game to go along with it. So Lee is a very complete fighter. He's getting better every fight. And he's facing a guy that is dangerous for sure in Santos, but I think that he's going to be able to be able to at least neutralize Santos enough that he's going to be able to excel at what he does best, and he's going to probably be able to pick Santos apart, control where the fight goes. And obviously, if he doesn't finish Santos, which is not going to be an easy task, I think he could at least outpoint him and win comfortable two, maybe all three rounds in his fight. So that's why you're seeing a high line. And that's why you're seeing people putting in Lee and parlays or whatnot as well, because really this is a fight that is more catered for him to win or lose, and he should win this fight. So stylistically, I do like Lee. I think Santos is a game fighter, and he's definitely dangerous, but I don't think he's going to get the victory here. So I'm picking Lee to win.
I just think this is a nightmare matchup for Leonardo Santos. Not only is Santos 35 to Lee's 23, but in terms of striking, where Santos has kind of shown his biggest improvements, he is one of those one and done type strikers where he just throws one kind of heavy leg kick or one big overhand right. And I think Lee is going to eat those for lunch, because even though he comes more from a grappling wrestling background, his striking fundamentals have improved drastically in the UFC. He has excellent striking, and he was holding his own with James Muntasri on the feet in his last fight before getting it to the ground and then just slaughtering Muntasri the second he got on top. But this is a guy that is gaining so much confidence right now, and I can definitely see him wanting to just put on a showcase of his improving stand-up ability here against Santos. Now, if this does go to the ground, Santos is going to be dangerous. I mean, this guy was a multiple-time Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu champion. He has good trips. He has very good submission ability, especially those chokes. I mean, they can come out of nowhere. Tony Martin was winning that fight against him in his last bout, and then, boom, second it went to the ground, Santos transitioned into a choke, and it was over. So that's something you're always going to have to look out for. And the other thing that I think is very important here is conditioning. Santos slows down in fights. Kevin Lee has had no problem going the distance. His last fight against Muntasri was actually the last time that he, or his first UFC finish. All of his previous UFC fights had gone the distance. So he has no problem with cardio whatsoever. And I think as long as Kevin Lee goes out there, pushes a high pace, and doesn't make any mistakes and leave an opening for Santos to take advantage and get a submission, then Kevin Lee is either going to win by late stoppage as Santos starts to slow down, or Lee just takes over and wins a decision pretty one-sided. I just think this is a nightmare matchup for Santos, and I just see Kevin Lee dominating this fight wherever it goes. And I can see him testing Santos's ground game and working in some takedowns as this fight wears on and Santos starts to slow down. So I think Kevin Lee is a guy that you're going to see in the top 15 at some point next year. And it's going to start with this fight, where I see him picking up a solid performance and a big victory over Leonardo Santos. So Kevin Lee is definitely my pick. Now, moving up to the welterweight division, we have Warley Alves, who is 9-0, taking on Colby Covington, who is 8-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open this fight exactly pick a minus 120 either way, and right now it's basically staying in that ballpark. It's minus 115 for Covington. Alves is minus 105, so line margins tightened up again a little bit, and it's virtually a pick'em with a very, very slight lean on Covington, and they are drawing two-way action on this fight as well, because it is a tough one to pick, and a lot of strong opinions out there either way, because obviously Alves has a lot of hype behind him. I mean, he's the Ultimate Fighter winner. A lot of people were expecting him to be the next big thing. I mean, he's still young. He's only 24 years old, coming out of Brazil. I'm saying, like, he's just so talented. He's explosive. Again, another athletic guy that has skill on the feet. He's very dangerous. He's got a ton of knockout power. Obviously, his submission game on the ground is legit. He's got wrestling to go along with it. You just can't really beat this guy or dominate this guy in any area unless, I mean, if you look back, his fight against Joban, that was definitely a test because he started slowing down. So if you could weather his storm and actually hang in there and basically put him to the test in round two and round three and be a little bit more active, I think he can be in some trouble here. And Covington is the type of guy that he matches up fairly well with him because Alves isn't going to be able to bully him on the ground. So this fight is going to probably stay upright for a while. Covington, obviously, he has a little bit better wrestling. That's his background as well. He's a wrestler, grinder, training at American Top Team. Still raw in the game for sure. I think he's not quite as developed as Alves is at this time, but he does get better every fight as well. So Covington's going to be the type of guy that Alves is not going to be able to take down, not control him on the ground, and this fight is going to stay standing. And I think Covington, his stand-up game isn't quite up to par again as with Alves right now, but he's catching up and he throws a variety in his attack, which is good to see. He's got a little bit of power, but he's definitely going to want to try to grind out Alves along the way. He has to be careful shooting it for takedowns because one of Alves's best submissions is obviously that guillotine choke. Covington has to realize that. So if he is going for those takedowns, be careful with your neck there. But that being said, it's going to be a very competitive fight. And realistically, I think Alves is capable more so of finishing this possibly on the feet. And I think Covington is more capable of possibly finishing this late or winning a decision. So I'm going to lean with Covington a little bit. I mean, both these guys, as I mentioned, are fairly young. Both these guys have a lot of good things ahead of them, I think, at 170. And the winner of this fight is going to take a huge leap towards the top of that division and probably earn himself a really quality fight next as well. So I'm glad and almost surprised that they matched these guys up this early in their career. But that being said, I'm glad they did because it's going to be a heck of a fight. So I lean Covington. I think he probably wins on the cards, if not gets a late finish.
Warley Alves is actually the more well-rounded of the two. But Colby Covington's conditioning and grappling in terms of offensive wrestling are so much better than Warley Alves's that I think that they could help him overcome some of his other deficiencies. Now, obviously, on the feet, I think Alves is going to be significantly ahead of Covington. Really, so far, what we've seen from Covington on the feet is he'll throw, you know, a head kick, he'll maybe throw a couple combinations, but everything he does is just to kind of get his opponent to back off and then push them into the fence so that he can work for takedowns. He really, all of his striking at this point in his career is about setting up the takedown. He's not really comfortable enough to actually stand and bang with people, and that's perfectly fine. Alves, on the other hand, he actually has the confidence in his stand-up, but he's a very good fight IQ guy where if the stand-up is even close, he'll just take the fight to a realm that he thinks he has a big advantage, which is usually the ground. He has a very dangerous top control game. He has very good takedowns. And obviously, he has some really good submissions with that guillotine choke of his. So what he's done in a lot of his fights, like when he faced Lyoto Alexander or when he faced Nordine Taleb, when he was having pretty even striking exchanges, he just took the fight to the canvas and won the fight there. So what I see happening in this fight is I think Alves is going to want to keep this fight standing this time around. He's going to use that fight IQ to try to keep it on the feet. And Covington's going to be the one that's going to be desperately start hunting for the takedown. And really what Covington needs to do as that all-American, you know, great wrestler and a big grinder is he needs to just consistently push a very high pace, make Alves work really hard, make him constantly defend takedowns, make him constantly have to fight to get back up if he does get taken down, and then just tire him out. Because, and other thing really important, don't leave your neck out there. Because if you're shooting in for a takedown and Alves drops for one of those guillotines, he could get himself in some trouble. But as long as he avoids that guillotine choke and he avoids, you know, getting hurt on the feet on the way to getting those takedowns, then I see Covington just grinding this out. you know, kind of Nick Lentz style or Darren Elkin style. This is the type of fight that he can make ugly and he can win. I mean, his last fight against Mike Pyle, he won about 14 of those 15 minutes by just constantly putting the pressure on Pyle, making it ugly, taking Pyle's strengths out of the fight, and avoiding a lot of Pyle's tricky submissions and guard game. So as long as Covington can do that, then I think he's going to win this fight. He just has the skill. He has the scrambling ability to remain on top, even if Alves throws a whole bunch of tricky moves his way. And I think Covington, it's his fight to lose. So I'm going to pick him. Just got to watch out for especially that first round. But yeah, Colby Covington is my pick. Now moving down to the strawweight division, we have Tisha Torres, who is 6-0. Taking on Jocelyn Jones-Liebarger, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I up in Torres, minus 265, the comeback on Liebarger, plus 185 right now. Torres is sitting at minus 275, the comeback on Liebarger is plus 235. So, again, line margin just tightened up a little bit. And a little bit more early action coming out of Torres, but it's going to be balanced out as well because people are going to actually respect Liebarger. And you know what? Honestly, they really should, because Liebarger is a very talented fighter. I know she's making her UFC debut here, and a lot of people might not know much about her, but she's coming off a very impressive win over Zoila Frosto. And of course, there's going to be some haters out there saying, hey, Frosto in MMA hasn't had the greatest success recently, so it's not a huge win. But still, she outstruck a striker in that fight. A lot of people were surprised how good Liebarger's boxing was. And at the same time, she's a very complete fighter because she does have the capabilities of taking the fight to the floor. She has decent wrestling, decent ground and pound, decent ground game. And she's a grinder, basically, is what you're getting out of Liebarger. So this is not going to be an easy fight for Torres. It's going to be a competitive fight, no doubt about it. But Tisha Torres is obviously one of the best girls at 115. There's no doubt about that either. I mean, she's the tiny tornado. Her nickname is fitting because she's such an active fighter that can basically beat most people in any area. I mean, she has a good ground game, good wrestling. I know, I mean, as far as her sub game goes and her, maybe her pure jiu-jitsu, there's going to be girls that are better than her as well, but to control her, to really grind her out, it's very tough to do. She has gotten better, I think, a little bit less pressure since she's come off the show, and she's going to continue to improve. Again, another girl that's working with American Top Team, so she has a great camp behind her. Confidence-wise, she's up there as well. And I think that she's – the difference in this fight is she's going to be a little bit ahead of Liebarger. She's going to be a little bit faster. She's going to be able to, I think, keep the pace up on Liebarger. She might be able to get a takedown or two along the way as well. So I think she's basically just going to grind out a tough – hard-fought victory over Liebarger because she's just going to be simply a step ahead. But again, Liebarger is going to be game. I think this is going to be a very competitive fight and another tricky fight, honestly. But I do have to lean Tisha's way because I just think she's a little bit better. Liebarger kind of is on maybe a step below the Torres level at this point. I think Torres is a type of fighter that's capable of earning a title shot and being competitive even, you know, in a title fight as well. So she's that good. She just has to get, I think, her groove back completely. She has to get that confidence level back, and she has to make some improvements. But this fight, I expect her to win over Liebarger, and it's going to be a pretty impressive victory because Liebarger is definitely a tough out. So my official pick is Tisha Torres to win this fight.
Yeah, Liebarger is stepping in on short notice after an injury to Michelle Waterson. So that is one definite big strike against her. And Tisha Torres is just so talented. She's actually 4 years younger than Liebarger, 26 to 30. And they both actually train out of great gyms, with Torres out of American Top Team and Liebarger out of the MMA Lab. The big difference, though, is, in my opinion, Torres is just way more well-rounded. She is a dynamic striker, a lot of kicks, a lot of quick punches, high volume, high pace, high pressure. The other big difference is she doesn't possess as much power as Liebarger. So she's the type of fighter that just does the death by a thousand cuts type of striking attack. And I think one of the biggest improvements for Torres, especially since her appearance on The Ultimate Fighter, is her wrestling has improved by leaps and bounds. So she will have a strong kicking game in this fight, and I think the kicks and takedowns will be very important. They could give her a big advantage, especially if she's able to get top position, kind of like her last fight against Angela Hill. Now, Liebarger, on the other hand, as Nick mentioned, coming off of that RFA title win over Zoila Frosto. She has excellent boxing. I think her boxing is right up there with Tisha Torres's in terms of overall talent. And she works good short combinations. She sits down on her punches. She has good power. I mean, she dropped Frosto with a jab. So that's definitely an advantage here against Torres, where, you know, if they're trading punch for punch, maybe Liebarger could get the better of it. If Liebarger is on the offensive, then she's great. Like, if she gets the inside position in the fence, she's able to land a lot of knees. If she gets top position on the ground, she can work some ground and pound. But I don't see her getting top position here. She really doesn't have great wrestling. She really gets top position if she hurts somebody on the feet. So, and I don't, unless she hurts Tisha, I don't think that's going to happen. And I don't see her getting top position. And she doesn't have a really reactive game. She doesn't counter very well. And when she's getting pressured, she does not respond as very well either. So I think what's going to happen here is I think Tisha outworks her on the feet, and then definitely just is the more dynamic fighter on the feet. So that's going to frustrate her a little bit. And then the second that Liebarger starts really opening up, going for the big power shots, that's when Torres is going to drop down for some takedowns. And I'd see this fight being a bit ugly, but Torres is going to do what she needs to do to pick up the win. And cardio shouldn't be an issue for either girl. Torres is a dynamo. I don't think she's ever gotten tired in a fight. And Liebarger, I mean, she went 5 rounds in her last fight, so she's going to be more than prepared for a short-notice 3-round fight. But that being said, I think Liebarger's good enough that she'll pick up some wins in her UFC career. I just think this one's a bit too tough for her, so I got to side with Tisha Torres. Now, closing out the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a bantamweight contest between Uriah Faber, who is 32-8, and Frankie Sanes, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Faber -505, the comeback on Sanes +335. Wasn't quite enough, because right now Faber's sitting at -700. Sanes is at +500. We all know the situation here. I mean, Faber, in most cases outside of a title shot, the guy is hard to beat. And he's such a well-rounded fighter, such a complete fighter. What he's accomplished throughout his whole career, you got to respect the guy. I mean, he's phenomenal, really. I won't get into too much detail, but he's a very complete fighter. And he does have an edge over Sanes in almost every category in this fight. He is getting up there in age a little bit, 36 years old. But Sanes is not a young buck either. He's only a year younger. At 35, but in fight years, obviously Faber's beyond that. But he still looks good, still has the cardio, obviously, to go a full 3 strong, and he should still be a step ahead of Sanes along the way. Now, Sanes isn't a bad fighter, so I do respect his ability. He's got a little bit of power on the feet. He pushes a high pace as well, has some wrestling, so he could be competitive at times with Faber in this fight. I just think that Faber's going to be a step ahead. Faber is also the better finisher out of the two as well. He's capable of knocking you out. He's capable of hitting a sub out of nowhere as well. He's very smooth in his technique. So there's a lot of good things to like about Faber. And honestly, it would be quite a big upset if Sanes pulls this off. It would mean, honestly, if he does pull off the upset, that we could start talking about Faber declining, because it really shouldn't happen in this spot here. So I am going to pick Faber to win this fight. Not a big surprise to most people out there that he's a huge favorite and he should come through with a win here. Sanes is going to be game, but I just think Faber is going to be too much for him.
Yeah, this is a really tough matchup for Frankie Sanes. The way that Sanes wins fights is he just pushes a high pace and then he just tries to wear you down and then grind you out with a really strong wrestling attack or just a strong pressure-based striking attack, even though he's not the most technical striker. And that's just not going to work against Uriah Faber. Nobody grinds out Uriah Faber. The guy is a tremendous wrestler. He is a good striker. He's kind of the complete package. He's just not quite at that elite top tier level where he can take on and become the champ. And Frankie Sanes, he's just not at that type of level of fighter that can beat Faber. I mean, you look at the guys that have beat Faber, and it's, you know, Hayden Barrow, it's Jose Aldo, it's Frankie Edgar in his last fight. And Frankie Sanes just isn't on that level. Sanes is going to try to put the pressure on Faber, but Sanes doesn't have the power to hurt Faber. I don't see him knocking him out. He's not conditioned enough to grind Faber out. I don't think his wrestling is good enough to take Faber down repeatedly and keep him down. And he doesn't have the submission ability of Faber. Faber has him beat in all those areas, in my opinion, except maybe pace. So really, I just don't see Frankie Saints getting enough going here to pick up a decision victory. And that's the only way he could win is by decision. But barring a fluke injury or something real crazy happening here, I see Uriah Faber either walking away with a decision or picking up a statement victory by finishing Frankie Saints, maybe even on the ground if Saints gets a little too confident shooting for takedowns. Maybe Faber latches on that patented guillotine of his. So my pick is going to be Uriah Faber, and I think he wins pretty convincingly here to get back on track. Now moving on to the UFC 194 main card on pay-per-view, we have a featherweight contest between Max Holloway, who is 14-3, and Jeremy Stephens, who is 24-11. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Holloway -315, the comeback on Stevens +235, and right now looking over the line at Five Dimes. Has been quite a bit of action coming in on Holloway. -550 now for him. Stevens is +425. So tough, because Stevens should deserve some respect. At 145, he is a beast. We all know that as well. He's got a tremendous amount of knockout power. He seems to be improving fight by fight, but he has recently faced some quality competition and struggled, even though he did look good against Bermudez and ended up winning that fight. Still, it was a challenge for him, no doubt about that. And then, of course, his losses to Oliveira and Swanson before that kind of set him back. And now he's facing arguably the best of those three. I mean, Holloway is definitely a guy that's climbing the ladder. He's always been good and respected. His stand-up game is on point. He's a tremendous fun fighter to watch because he's always bringing it. And I mean, his boxing's good. He's got the speed, the power, the fight IQ to go along with it. He's hard to take down. And then his ground awareness in most cases is pretty good as well. So he's very difficult out for most people in this division. And he's only gaining confidence because Holloway, on the other hand, even though Stevens has been losing to some of these quality fighters, Holloway's been winning these fights. So a lot of things really trending for Holloway in this spot. He just has to be careful. I mean, Stevens has enough knockout power that he's capable of finishing anybody at 145. So Holloway is a tough guy. His defense is even okay in most cases. I think it's going to be hard for Stevens to land that knockout punch and put him out of there because of his fight IQ. Holloway is definitely a very intelligent fighter. And again, he's got that momentum on his side. I think Holloway's basically what you're going to see here is him picking Stevens apart. He's going to be a little bit faster. He's going to be landing on him. I don't know if Holloway's going to be able to get rid of Stevens because Stevens is a pretty tough guy. This is a three-rounder as well. So I think that they can kind of withstand each other a little bit, and we'll probably see a somewhat competitive decision, but it should be a decision that sees Holloway winning two, maybe all three rounds, and maybe not even being a controversial type of decision. So that's why you're seeing him as a big favorite. You still got to respect Stevens' power a little bit here, but I kind of agree with some of the early action that's come in on Holloway as well. He should win this fight. He is a better fighter right now. I think he's actually only getting better. And Stevens probably has reached that peak that he's going to start coming down little by little. And we're probably going to see him maybe start to decline soon. The scary thing is Holloway's only 23 years old. I mean, how much better can the guy get, really? He's going to keep on improving it. It's going to be scary to face Holloway as time goes on, because he's really going to come into his own. So in this fight, though, I just basically think he's going to at least outpoint Stevens. Maybe he finishes him along the way, but it's Holloway's fight to win or lose at this point. My official pick is going to be Holloway to win.
This is a terrific matchup that the UFC has booked, but you have to think that it's on favored for Max Holloway. I mean, Jeremy Stephens has had a hell of a run at featherweight. He's definitely picked up some quality wins over guys like Darren Elkins and Dennis Bermudez. But Max Holloway is currently, I believe, on a 7-fight win streak. And he has truly come into his own, especially in these last few fights where he's picked up not just victories, but dominant victories over the likes of Cub Swanson and then most recently Charles Oliveira. The guy has just really found a way to utilize all of his physical advantages where he has such a high pace and high output and tremendous ability to hit people and not get hit back. And he's making it work for him. I mean, you look at that fight against Cub Swanson. That was a work of art against Swanson. I mean, Swanson was a guy that was incredibly dangerous in the UFC featherweight division. And Max Holloway just made him look terrible, just consistently in and out, cracking him, getting out of the way. He has such good fundamentals, And his defense and ability to not get hit has improved so much. He is clearly a guy on the rise right now. And if he goes out there and takes care of business like I think he is in this fight, then, I mean, he's going to be right up there in line for a title shot, especially if, say, Chad Mendez beats Frankie Edgar. I think that Holloway would probably leapfrog him. Now, back to this matchup. I mean, Jeremy Stephens, he's a guy with a ton of power. You can never count him out in a fight fully. I mean, he has had multiple times in his career where he was losing a fight and then landed a Hail Mary knockout late, like against Marcus Davis or even the lightweight champ, Rafael Dos Anjos. So he clearly has that ability to finish a fight at any moment. And maybe his best strike in this fight could be that big knee of his, the flying knee. Now, Holloway's not going to be diving in for a takedown like Dennis Bermudez was, but if they close the distance in the clinch or something, Stephens could turn that into a big weapon. And overall, though, I just see Holloway keeping this fight at kickboxing range, using those great combinations of his, and just wearing Stephens down. And if he doesn't pick up a finish, then he's either going to win a dominant decision or a fluke knockout is going to happen for Stephens. But for the most part, I see Max Holloway winning this fight convincingly on a wide majority of occasions if they were able to rematch. So you have to favor Max Holloway, so I'm going to pick him. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Damian Maia, who is 21-6, taking on Gunnar Nelson, who is 14-1-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Maia -120, Nelson -120. So exactly pick 'em for each guy right now. It is actually Maia -145, the comeback on Nelson, +125. So a little bit more money coming in on Maia, but don't let that really fool you too much, because there's going to be some money coming in on Nelson as well. This is a competitive fight. This is an awesome fight. I mean, this is one of the reasons why this card is so stacked, honestly, because it starts, in my opinion, the main card is just phenomenal. I mean, we talked about the Stephens Holloway, what a fun fight that should be, but the rest of them from here on out are just phenomenal matchups, and including this one. I mean, you have basically a grappler versus grappler fight here, and they're two of the best grapplers in the sport. I mean, these guys, again, their backgrounds as submission fighters speak for themselves. It's phenomenal, the high level that we're going to see here. But what differentiates these guys a little bit is going to be the stand-up game a little bit, because I do think that Maia, he's proven time and time again, he's one of the best grinders, one of the best ground fighters in the weight class at 170. He's had some quality wins, including his recent win over Magny, which now looks even better because Magny's been on an extreme roll, as we all know. He's fought some youthful guys like LaFleur and got the win there as well. So he's capable of getting the fight to the ground, controlling people, if not finishing them on the ground. He's at least going to win on the scorecards. But here in this fight, Nelson neutralizes all of that. And I think even if Maia has a little bit of success getting Nelson to the floor, Nelson's not going to remain on his back long. The fight's going to be on the feet, take place against the cage a little bit. And if there's separation, Nelson is by far at this point the better striker. He's getting better and better each fight, I think. He's getting more experience. He's getting more confidence. He's got that, again, unorthodox karate style about him, basically. And he has success because he's got a little bit of power that goes along with that. He's going to obviously have some confidence coming in off of that really impressive Thatch win in his last fight as well. Especially he had to bounce back with an impressive victory like that over a very grueling story loss that he had. I mean, that was a very tough fight. So a lot of people, I think, might have been counting Nelson out after that story fight. Maybe that the hype was a little bit too much, but I don't think so. I think that that loss was actually good for Nelson. I think he really learned a lot. He knew that he had to work on more than just his grappling game, and he needed to take his game to a whole nother level. And we see that. I mean, he is getting better. That Thatch fight, it was ended pretty quickly, so we didn't get a lot to see. I mean, how dominant he actually was in that fight was impressive. But I'm saying in practice, everything about Nelson, you got to love. And I expect him to get better fight by fight. And he's going to have a significant stand-up advantage over Maia. Maia's boxing is okay. I mean, it's serviceable, especially for a ground fighter. But here, Nelson's going to be a younger, fresher fighter. He's going to have the speed. He's going to have the power. And again, he neutralizes Maia on the ground. So I actually lean towards Nelson. I think stylistically, this is a great matchup for him. And this is a case where MMA math doesn't work. I mean, we all know that Maia was able to just destroy Story in that fight, submit him fairly quickly, and Nelson obviously lost a decision to Story in that fight as well. So you throw that all out the window. The way these guys match up, I honestly think it favors Nelson in this fight. So I am going to pick Nelson. I think he wins by outpointing Maia on the feet. If not, I mean, Maya is getting up there in age a little bit. I mean, we could see Nelson catch him, clip him on the feet, and possibly put him out as well. So my official pick is going to be Gunnar Nelson to pull off the slight upset win over Damian Maya.
Both of these guys are absolutely phenomenal grapplers. I mean, if they get the bout to the ground against anybody else, it's over within a couple minutes usually. Sometimes in Maya's case, he'll be a little safer on the ground, but I mean, he's a guy that can take anybody's back. And I think in this bout, this is going to be one of the first times where they've faced an opponent that is just as good as them on the ground. Honestly, I don't know which of these two fighters is better on the ground. I mean, maybe a few years ago, Damian Maya, I'd be like, for sure that he would be better, but he is getting a bit up there in age, and Gunnar Nelson is in his athletic prime right now. So that actually gets me to think that this is a complete wash if this goes to the ground. I really think that it could have either guy, if they make a mistake, could finish the bout there. The big difference, though, between these two is on the feet. Damian Maya has just never been super comfortable on the feet. He's always been a bit kooky looking, awkward, doesn't really throw anything with power, doesn't really throw combinations well. He basically is just able to hold his own against some people because they're afraid of him closing the distance and getting into the ground. And I don't think that's going to be a fear for Gunnar Nelson. So you're with Gunnar. He's a guy that does have some power on the feet. He does have some interesting karate styles in the stand-up with some unique stances. And you saw in his last fight where he was able to step inside on Brandon Thatch and not just hurt him, but drop him. I mean, that was amazing. I was there live at UFC 189, and I was flabbergasted. I thought that Thatch would have a huge advantage on the feet, and Nelson was just so quick and got in there and hit him with a combination right on the chin and put him down. So if he does that against Maya, I can see him knocking Maya out or stunning Maya so hard that maybe he could open up a submission opportunity. So I think, honestly, the only difference between these two is the fact that Nelson's younger. They both have the same reach. They're both about the same height. So neither guy's going to have a big advantage there. So Nelson's just younger, and Nelson's the better striker with more power, and Nelson has the better chin. So you got to favor Gunnar Nelson here. I just think styles make fights, and this is a good stylistic matchup for Gunnar. So I'm going to pick him. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Jacare Souza, who is 22-3 with one no contest, taking on Yoel Romero, who is 10-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I've been Jacare Souza -170, the comeback on Romero +130 right now, looking over five dimes. It's Souza -150, the comeback on Romero is +130. So line margins tighten up a little bit. Early action did come in on Jacare, line moved up, but then there's been a little bit more action coming in on Romero as well. So this is another spot where the sportsbooks are going to get strong opinions on either fighter here because they're both quality middleweights, no doubt about that. Jacare, man, I mean, the guy – talk about improvements. I mean, I'm going to say that about both of these guys here. But Jacare is, of course, one of the best grapplers. Again, this seems to be a trend on this card. There's a lot of great ground fighters on this card that their jiu-jitsu credentials just are amazing, really. And Jacare is one of these guys. I mean, look what he's done outside of the UFC in the grappling world. He's one of the best ever. So the guy's phenomenal on the ground. But what's impressive about some of these grapplers is that they're – getting good at the stand-up game as well. If you look at Jacare, I mean, fight by fight, you could see improvements in his stand-up game. He's getting more confidence. He has knockout power on the feet now as well. Just his overall game, even his wrestling, I think, is improving. So Jacare is one of these guys that really has been working on his game quite a bit, and he's dangerous at all aspects of the game, not just the ground game anymore. So you have to respect that for sure. And then you're getting another quality fighter in Romero that you can say a lot of the same things about. Obviously, it's his wrestling background that's impressive there, not the pure jiu-jitsu end of it. But still, I mean, he's a stud wrestler. He's got a tremendous amount of power on the feet. He's coming off of a very impressive performance against Lyoto Machida, which a lot of people are surprised how that went down, really. I think what Romero showed in that fight was actually a lot of discipline. In the past, he started a little bit too fast at times. He just kind of would let his cardio get the better of him, and he looked kind of bad as the fight went. But I think we're starting to see a little bit more discipline out of him. I think we're starting to see a little bit better cardio out of him. And then, of course, on the feet, he's always dangerous. He's got so much knockout power to go along with it. He's a hard guy to take down, but he has been taken down before. I mean, look, Brunson had some success in that fight against him. It looked like he was actually on his way to losing that fight before he did end up knocking Brunson out as well. But that's a crazy thing about Romero. He's got such tremendous power on the feet that even if he is trailing, if he is far behind, it doesn't take much for him to land on your chin and put you out there. Now, both these guys are getting older as well. Romero's 38. Jacare's 35 right now. In MMA years, though, I think Jacare obviously has had more fights. I think he's probably the older fighter in MMA years, but both of these guys, it might not come into play here either. I think what's going to happen here is Romero's going to have to look to keep this fight upright. And it's going to be difficult. It's not going to be an easy task and probably have some good accuracy and land on Jacare's chin. And if he does, I don't think Jacare is going to be able to take it, honestly. I think Jacare overall, his chin has been okay. He has been rocked in fights before in the past. He's been knocked out as well. You can say a lot of the same things about Romero, though. His chin, in my mind, is a little bit suspect. I mean, cardio, again, has a lot to do with that. I mean, he's been clipped. He's been rocked. He's been knocked out before in the past as well. But I still think that in this matchup, it's going to be Jacare coming looking for the takedowns, and Romero is going to have his spots and opportunities to knock out another top rated fighter in Jacare here. So a tough fight to call, a tough fight to pick, because both these guys are such really beasts in what they do. And they deserve to be at the top of the game here, because the winner of this fight probably gets the next title shot. I mean, this is how important this fight is to either guy. I think both of their windows are kind of closing a little bit because they are both getting a little bit older. So this is a huge opportunity for one fighter. I'm going to actually go against the grain and pick the underdog here in Romero. I think he is going to be able to sprawl and brawl, and I think he is going to be the more effective striker here. A tough fight, tough one to pick as well, but I do think that Romero is going to probably get the job done here, so I'm going to lean his way a little bit.
The winner of this fight is absolutely getting the next title shot. I mean, we got the number two versus the number three. The only guys ranked higher are fighting in the next bout for the title. So you got to definitely think that Souza and Romero have done enough at this point where a victory would absolutely give them that next crack. And they've earned it. I mean, these two are the elite of the elite right now in the UFC middleweight division. Souza has beaten everyone that they've put in front of him. His only loss under the Zuffa banner in Strikeforce or UFC combined was a very close decision to Luke Rockhold when he lost his title originally in Strikeforce. And Souza has done nothing but dominate ever since then. I mean, everybody they put in front of him, he has pretty much obliterated. And with Yoel Romero, I mean, he's gotten better and better every time we've seen him. I mean, he was a little shaky. I mean, obviously the Strikeforce debut at light heavyweight didn't go so well, but he's gotten so much better since his first couple fights in the UFC where, you know, he was having a little bit of trouble against somebody like Derek Brunson who got some takedowns on him and everything. But now you've got him going out there and just murdering Brad Tavares and then just crushing Lyoto Machida in violent fashion. I mean, not a lot of people thought that was going to happen, and Yoel really stepped up his game. I mean, in that fight, he was holding his own on the feet against Machida, and then the second he was able to get inside on him and drag him to the canvas, I mean, he was a big, big bad trouble for Machida. Now, how these guys match up stylistically, both of them are two of the best overall athletes in the UFC middleweight division. Honestly, I think Souza and Romero are better athletes than the two guys fighting in the main event or in the co-main event for the middleweight title. The problem is, of course, that they're getting a bit up there in age. I mean, Souza's 35 or Romero's 38, but I mean, both of these guys are elite world-class fighters. I mean, Romero was obviously an Olympic caliber wrestler, and Souza is one of the all-time great Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu fighters. And they both have actually adapted striking extremely well into their game. I think Romero is a bit more of the explosive striker. He's the kind of guy that can really put you down with a flying knee or a big Superman punch or something where he just flies forward and catches you and you're not ready for it. Souza, on the other hand, he's definitely a little more grounded. He'll sit down on his punches, a little bit more technical on the feet. But, I mean, he packs just as much pure punching power as Romero does. I mean, both of these guys can really put a hurt on people with their power. And then you factor in the ground games, And this thing gets really interesting because obviously Souza can submit just about anybody in the world. And then Romero can take down just about anybody. I mean, he took down Machida with ease. And I think I don't expect him to be going for takedowns against Souza because I think that would get him in a bit of trouble. But we'll see if he's been working on that takedown defense because he has been taken down in the past. It's a bit surprising thinking an Olympic caliber wrestler getting taken down by an MMA fighter, especially like a Derek Brunson guy. But that is probably the biggest cause for concern here. Jacare Souza has advanced takedowns for a Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy. Most BJJ guys, they get trips. They try to close the distance, drag the fight to the ground with a body lock. But Jacare, he can grab single legs, double legs. He can blast power takedowns. And that's something that could catch Romero off guard. And if Souza can gain a dominant position on the ground, I think he's going to be in terrific shape in this fight. And then if you factor in Souza being able to sit down on his punches and going toe-to-toe with Romero, I think he is, being the more technical fighter, I think he's going to be at a slight advantage in pure boxing range. In open space, I favor Romero because he can be a little bit more dynamic with his kicks and his flying attacks and jumping attacks. But I think Jacare should hold the advantage in boxing range, and Jacare should have the advantage on the ground. So I just give enough slight advantages to Jacare here that I'm going to have to pick him. So Jacare Souza is my pick. I think he either picks up a knockout or maybe a late submission. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have the UFC middleweight title on the line between champion Chris Weidman, who is 13-0, and challenger Luke Rockhold, who is 14-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Man, what a great fight. I mean, really, from the beginning, I said that, and I really think that this is phenomenal because you're going to see two of obviously the best fighters in the world. I mean, Weidman is a current world champion in 185, and then you have a former Strikeforce champion in Rockhold that finally earned his title shot as well. And you have two complete, well-rounded fighters that can beat you in every aspect of the game, whether it's standing up, whether it's on the ground, by submission, by ground and pound, just multiple ways they can win a fight. So these guys are complete fighters, and we're going to see an awesome fight here. The more I think about it, the more I look through stuff, the more I'm starting to lean a little bit towards Rockhold. And at the beginning, I was leaning a little bit towards Weidman, so I kind of swayed myself. And you know, the reason being, I'm going to kind of explain here as well. Both of them are very complete fighters, as I just mentioned. I think Weidman has a little bit more pure power. Obviously, a lot of people will lean towards Weidman in the wrestling realm as well, but I think it's going to be hard for Weidman to actually get the takedowns on Rockhold. I think it's going to be hard for him to keep Rockhold on his back. And then on the ground, as far as pure submission skill goes and just how his smooth ground game is overall, I think Rockhold actually has an edge on the ground over Weidman. And then on the feet, Weidman does have a lot of power. Weidman can be a very effective striker. It's a thing of beauty, really, to watch him move forward and really watch him outstrike most opponents. But the problem is, I think in open space here, I think at distance, Rockhold is the better fighter. He's a little bit more dangerous. He mixes up his attack a little bit better. And I think defensively, it is a little bit of a concern because if you look at Weidman, I mean, even in that Vitor Belfort fight, how he starts off sometimes, and sometimes he gets in these lulls where he trusts himself a little bit too much, or he trusts that chin because he has such a good, strong chin that I think he leans on it too much. He's not afraid of getting clipped, getting knocked out. Well, he took a little bit of damage early on, even in that Belfort fight. And I think if he ends up in that same situation with a guy like Rockhold, the takedown's not going to be there as easy for him, right? So he's going to be in some trouble. He's going to have to really fight through it a lot harder. And I think Rockhold is such an intelligent fighter that he's going to be able to push the pace back and get Weidman in some trouble. Again, either if it's on the feet, if the fight gets on the ground and there's some scrambles that go on there as well, I kind of give the edge to Rockhold in those spots as well. So chin-wise, I do give the edge to Weidman. I think he does have the better chin slightly. Rockhold has been obviously knocked out in the past. I mean, that kick from Vitor Belfort, I actually have to give him a little bit of leeway there because that Belfort knockout over Rockhold was just amazing. I mean, the timing, the accuracy of that kick would knock out most. So I'm really kind of almost tossing that out the window because I don't expect Weidman to land a spin kick here in this fight. Anyway, that being said, I just think we're going to see an awesome, awesome fight. And the more I look at it, the more I talk about it, the more I mention, I just think that Rockhold does have several advantages in his fight, and some of those that I just explained here as well. So we're going to see an ultra-competitive fight. If it hits the scorecards, I think we're going to see possibly a split decision type of fight. That's how close this fight's going to be. But I think if we do see a finish, it might be Rockhold pulling off the upset and either beating Weidman by submission on the ground. I mean, how smooth and how dangerous really is Rockhold? I mean, it's phenomenal. We're talking about Jacare and some of these other Brazilian jiu-jitsu stars on this card, and Rockhold is one of these guys that can really hang and really should be respected by them all. I mean, he's that good on the ground, just phenomenal. So anyway, back and forth we go on this fight. I think it's going to be an awesome fight. Weidman does have some advantages, but I think Rockhold just has more. So in space, Rockhold's a better fighter. I think on the ground, he's a little bit more dangerous as well. And I do like Rockhold's cardio just a tad. I know Weidman's proven that he can go five rounds. He's got the toughness to go as well, but he does, again, along the way, kind of slow down at times, and I think Rockhold's going to continue to push the pace. So I'm actually leaning towards Rockhold becoming the new middleweight champion of the world here, and I think that's the way I'm going to go here. So Rockhold is my official pick.
Now, I definitely agree that this is a crazy close fight. Honestly, I feel like this is Chris Weidman's toughest title fight yet, and that includes the first two Anderson Silva fights, that includes the Machida fight, that includes the Vitor bout. Luke Rockhold is extremely dangerous. He's a guy that is going to have an advantage in space because he employs a lot of kicks to his game. He has some absolutely brutal body kicks that could do some serious damage. He can land to the head and legs as well. So Weidman's going to have to be careful to avoid allowing distance exchanges. And then on the ground, while Weidman is a world-class wrestler and incredible from top position, I mean, he was able to hold down Anderson Silva in the first round of their bout twice and dominate him there. I think Luke Rockhold is on another level on the ground as well, even from guard. So Weidman's going to have to be extremely careful if he tries to get some takedowns. Honestly, if Weidman wants takedowns in this fight, I think they should be just for brownie points late in rounds to try to help seal them. And where this fight is going to be most interesting is who's the aggressor, who's applying the pressure. And I think that's one of the things that Weidman does extremely well. He does a great job of what they call waiting and trading, where he's constantly moving forward, looking for those moments, and then throwing combinations, forcing his opponent to move backwards. And if he's able to do that against Rockhold successfully, then he's going to take out a lot of that kicking threat from Rockhold, because you really can't just sit down and plant on a kick if your opponent is constantly pushing forward into you. So I think that's going to be a very important part of the Weidman game plan, and very similar to what he did against Machida, where he just never gave him that opening, that extra space to get that distance and pick his spots and, you know, be that kind of striking snake. And I think Weidman's going to do the exact same thing here against Luke Rockhold. Now, Luke Rockhold is going to be extremely dangerous at all points of this fight. He has a lot of power in his legs, power in his hands, and obviously a tremendous grappling game and ground and pound. So Weidman's going to have to be cautious at all portions of this fight. But if he can constantly pressure Rockhold, then I think he's going to be in good shape. He's going to take away a lot of the threats that Rockhold presents. He's not amazing moving backwards. You kind of saw that in the Vitor fight, where the second Vitor really started to pressure him. Rockhold froze a little bit, and Vitor was able to knock him out. So I'm not saying that's going to happen here for sure, but one thing that is extremely important is the fact that Chris Weidman has a granite chin, and Luke Rockhold doesn't. I mean, he's still a very tough guy, very dangerous at all points, but if they're trading punch for punch, it's going to be Luke Rockhold that goes down in this fight. Rockhold has been knocked out by Vitor, obviously. He's been hurt in fights like the title fight he won against Jacare. So that is something you absolutely have to keep an eye on, because Weidman has that big power that, you know, knocked out Anderson Silva cold with one punch. So if Weidman's able to connect with something really heavy on the feet, he could put away Rockhold. So I think that while Rockhold does have some advantages in this fight and it's going to be extremely competitive, I have to favor the champ here. And I do think that Rockhold, the longer this fight goes, the better chance he has, because His conditioning is elite, and Weidman does slow down a little bit as this fight enters the championship rounds. And that could be an opportunity for Rockhold to strike. But overall, I gotta favor the champ. I'm going with Chris Weidman. Now moving on to the main event of the evening, we have Jose Aldo, UFC featherweight champion, who is 25-1, defending his title against interim champion Conor McGregor, who is 18-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I opened McGregor -180, the comeback on Aldo at +150. And that is a little bit of a surprise if you're looking over at Five Dimes right now, where it's McGregor -130, the comeback on Aldo is +110. One of the reasons I opened it that high is because the amount of money that always comes in on Conor McGregor. European bettors, obviously his Irish fans, and just the diehard McGregor fans that he's gained from his performances, really, in the octagon thus far. I mean, McGregor has been a beast. He's faced high-level competition, and he's looked phenomenal in all those fights. Even Mendez. I mean, I obviously picked Mendez in his last fight. I thought he had to basically prove that he could stuff the takedowns of a very capable wrestler, of a very amazing fighter in Mendez. I mean, Mendez has a total package with the punching power, with the wrestling, obviously. It was just a great challenge to McGregor, even though the fight was on short notice. And I really firmly believe that Mendez would pass that challenge. Now, early on, Mendez was looking good. He was getting some takedowns along the way. He was actually clipping McGregor in that fight as well. But McGregor's chin proved to be great. I mean, he can definitely take a punch. And he was able to get off his back and do some damage. And as Mendez started to slow down those body kicks, the fight IQ of McGregor is very smart, and he's got that killer instinct. So to me, I gain even more respect. I know a lot of people can say that fight was on short notice or whatnot. That's fine, but he still beat a very game Mendez in that fight. So you got to give the guy credit. And he's ran through everybody else that they've thrown in front of him, really, and he's done it in impressive fashion. So McGregor's legit. There's no doubt about that. And this is a very difficult fight for Aldo, especially if McGregor's mind games are working, and it very possibly could be. I mean, Aldo, there's a lot of pressure on him. The guy hasn't lost for how many years? Over a decade now that it's been since he's lost a fight. A lot of people were saying he's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. That pressure holding the strap for that long has to get to you as well. So there's a lot of things outside of actual technical skill that come into play for this fight. Hopefully Aldo could throw all that stuff out the window and really focus on his opponent. Because to me, in my opinion, what Aldo could take away from that Mendez fight is Mendez was able to clip him. Even though he didn't do a lot of damage in that fight, still, McGregor showed a little bit of flaw in his defense. McGregor also showed that he can get taken down. Now, a lot of people are going to mention that McGregor was hurt going into that fight with Mendez as well. I understand that. But still, I think that Mendez, regardless, would have got the takedowns. Mendez still would have landed those punches he landed. So Aldo, in a way, should take a little bit more confidence from that fight. I think that he is going to be able to believe in himself that he can possibly knock McGregor out. I mean, the guy's a beast. The guy has been wearing the strap for this long for a reason. You're talking about pure knockout power, killer instinct, fight IQ, everything. I mean, Aldo is a phenomenal striker. He's one of the best pound-for-pound fighters for a reason. I mean, just everything that you like to see in him. Now, he is going to be outsized a little bit. And again, mentally, hopefully he's not affected by this fight, because this is a fight he can win. And I think more than anything else, he should use all this as motivation, because McGregor's that guy that's kind of really showing Aldo no respect at all. So I think that we're going to see a very propelled Aldo coming into this fight. He's going to be there as far as his motivation. He's not going to need extra motivation for this fight. He's going to want to knock McGregor's head off. There's no doubt about that. And if he fights smart and if he game plans smart, he could be able to get a takedown. And McGregor still has not really been exposed on the ground since his earlier losses in his career, which he's gotten better for sure. But Aldo does have a significant advantage on the ground. Aldo isn't that type of fighter. He doesn't really typically look for takedowns. But in this case, going to the ground from time to time or trying to finish the fight on the ground might not be a bad idea. So I do think Aldo is still the more complete fighter. Aldo is still the better striker until McGregor proves us otherwise. I know this fight he's going to have to deal with, again, that reach and the power from McGregor. But I think Aldo can prove that he still is the man in this fight. So it's hard to bet against or pick against a guy like Jose Aldo in this spot. So until he does get dethroned, man, I'm going to go with him, man. I mean, he's still – just a great fighter. So I think a lot of us are kind of showing him a little bit of disrespect. I know the money's been coming in on Aldo, but make no mistake, again, it is going to climb back out towards McGregor as we get closer to fight time. So those of you guys out there that are listening to the podcast that are looking at the line, if you're looking to bet Jose Aldo, I would wait because I'm expecting the line to go back up. You'll probably get a better number. Now, those of you guys that are wanting to bet McGregor, now's probably the time. I mean, at minus 130 across the board, I'm looking at the Don Best screen right now. It looks like he's about 130, 135 out there. I'm not sure if it's going to get much lower than that. Could possibly drop down a few more cents, but I think we are going to see it climb back up. So McGregor backers, I would take McGregor now. Aldo backers, I would wait a little bit. But as far as the pure pick goes for this fight, I'm leaning towards Aldo because I do think, again, I mean, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And right now, Aldo is still the man, even though McGregor has looked awesome. I believe that Aldo is the better striker. I believe that Aldo is the better fighter. And I believe that Aldo is going to win this fight. So my pick is Jose Aldo to defeat Conor McGregor.
Aldo and McGregor, they have such interesting styles. I mean, McGregor is a bit more wild and crazy on the feet. Aldo is so composed and technical and violent that I just can't wait to see what's going to happen when these two guys are finally staring across from each other in the cage. We're just a week away. Now, Aldo, obviously the greatest featherweight in the history of the sport. I mean, he is the only UFC featherweight champion, and for a reason. I mean, the guy is incredibly talented. I mean, you just look at some of his performances. He can finish people at a moment's notice, or he can just sit back and outpoint you and just win a decision. I mean, he doesn't really care. All he really cares about is holding on to that title. But, I mean, obviously, if an opportunity presents itself, he will pull that trigger. I mean, you saw that in the fight against the Korean Zombie. The second he saw his opponent was hurt, he smelled blood and just went for it. Or hell, on his way up the ladder, you look at the Cub-Swanson fight. Swanson comes out aggressive. Aldo just cracks him with a double flying knee to the jaw, puts him out of the count in like 20 seconds. So this is a guy that is capable of going the distance for 5 rounds or ending the fight in 15 seconds. I mean, it really doesn't matter. Conor McGregor, on the other hand, we haven't seen a lot of his fights go the distance, other than the Max Holloway fight where he hurt his knee. But for the most part, this is a guy that gets in your face and takes some punches and then unloads huge amount of volume and really has a great left hand. I mean, this is a guy that, as a southpaw, relies on that big straight left and then also will wear you down with some brutal body kicks, whether they're spinning kicks. I mean, he really is a dynamic kicker, but for the most part, they have not always been that effective in his UFC career, except his last fight against Chad Mendes. So he's definitely starting to really develop that kicking game. But that being said, as impressive as McGregor's kicks were against Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo's kicks are the ones to beat. I mean, this guy, when he hits you in the leg, it is some of the most devastating leg kicks in the UFC. I mean, he has, there's this incredible article written by Sean El Sheehan on MMA Fighting where a lot of Aldo's former opponents talk about the after effects of fighting him, and they had damage to their legs for months afterwards. So, I mean, this is a guy that is so technical with his kicking game that he can really take you completely out of a fight just by landing a few of those, because they're like a baseball bat hitting you in the leg. And McGregor's going to have to be careful with that. But what's interesting is with Aldo's finishing off a lot of combinations with that right lower leg kick, the counter to that is the straight left. And that's Conor McGregor's best weapon. So we're going to have a really interesting dynamic of Aldo's low leg kicks with McGregor's straight left. And McGregor has some reach on Aldo, so he should be able to lunge forward and crack Aldo with that straight left. Now, an extremely important dynamic in this fight as well is the fact that, as Nick mentioned, McGregor's striking defense isn't great. I mean, if you go back and watch every single one of his UFC fights, he has been hit hard by counter right hands in every single fight. Marcus Brimage, Dennis Seaver, Max Holloway, you name it. Every single guy he's fought, Chad Mendes really cracked him with some. And he just takes it. McGregor has one of the best chins I've ever seen for a featherweight. So this is going to be a very interesting dynamic on will McGregor be able to take Jose Aldo's best shot, because Aldo's counter right is one of his best punches. It is his best punch, and it might be his best overall strike. So you're going to see a very interesting dynamic of McGregor's straight left against Aldo's counter right. And it's not like Jose Aldo's never fought a southpaw before. He did fight Kenny Florian in one of his title defenses, and he had some terrific game plans against Florian with instead switching to kicking the inside leg of the lead for Florian and then cracking him with a punch the second he reacted to that. So Aldo, this is a guy with a terrific footwork and extremely, and I'm talking very subtle head movement. This is a guy that will just very slightly slip his head left or right to avoid punches, and his reactions are impeccable. So that's going to be something really interesting to keep an eye on, because in his last fight, when he fought Chad Mendez, that was one of the first times that you ever really saw Jose Aldo get hit hard on the feet. So I don't know if that was a sign of things to come with Aldo finally starting to get hit, maybe seeing a couple cracks in the king, but Conor McGregor is going to test Jose Aldo's head movement and defense in this fight, because Conor is a tremendous striker with a very long reach for the featherweight division. So what you're going to see in this fight is some incredible striking exchanges. I don't think it's going to go to the ground or in the clinch very often. I think these guys are going to be in kickboxing range, occasionally in boxing range, and they're just going to tear each other to pieces. And I'm going to side with Nick as well. I got to stick with the champ. Jose Aldo is so incredibly talented, and I think that this is the type of fighter that's going to either push him to the limits and defeat him, or is going to make him put on perhaps the best performance of his entire career thus far. So I have to side with Aldo until he's defeated. Until he loses that title, I'm going to be picking him. So I think he goes out there and comes off as the underdog and pulls it out against Conor McGregor. So my pick is Jose Aldo. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 194. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the UFC 194 weigh-ins. So stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAOddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick's or Mike James's premium bets. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert. If you prefer that method, just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsors, Five Dime Sportsbook and Countermove. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.